asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances.
So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. Let's be honest. The first place our family turns to when we're looking for a quick getaway is always Airbnb. I know we can find an amazing place to stay at the beach, like St. Simon's on the Georgia coast, for instance. It's one of our favorite spots. That's what comes to mind, Matt, when I'm thinking about travel. And while you're staying at someone else's home, have you ever thought about what you could be doing with your own home?
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you are away, because that is all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room if you've got one. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com. Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today, we're asking the question, is the stock market broken?
Is the stock market broken? Makes me think of like if you've always gone to a certain candy machine. So our kids, when we go to visit Kate's folks, the in-laws, they've got this M&M's machine. And
at their house?
Yeah, like an old-timey like gumball machine that they've stuck peanut M&M's in with a little jar of quarters or coins to the side of it.
Uh-huh.
And it makes me think that if we went to visit them and the girls stuck a coin in there to get some of those peanut M&M's and it didn't work, they would say, hey, this thing's broken. It's busted. I'm not getting the treats. I'm not getting the candy like I used to. And I think that's how a lot of folks have been approaching the stock market. They've sort of seen it as this ultra savings account that just only goes up in value, where they've only seen their balances grow over time. And that's why we're asking this question today, because I think there might be some folks wondering, have things changed? Is it going to be different this time? And they want to know what they should be doing. That's why we're talking about investing.
Yeah,
and talking about the stock market.
Recent returns have not been so good if you are largely exposed to the stock market. And future predictions aren't so great either. So we're going to kind of talk about the stock market from both of those perspectives today on the show. Before we get to that, Matt, I want to mention we got feedback from a listener, Amanda, who is participating in the How to Money Sell Your Stuff Challenge, which, by the way, just to update you, I sold three things this past weekend.
Look at you.
So,
you got after it. Were you shamed?
Turning on the jets.
You shouldn't feel shamed.
No, I wasn't. But it lit a fire into me because it was something that I'd put on the back burner.
That's why we talk about this kind of stuff. We talk about money because we want you focusing on your money.
I got challenged.
We're talking about the challenge because we want you to be
made
challenged.
Made myself more than $100 on those three items,
nice.
Which is great. And it just felt good to clear some things out that I've been meaning to clear out, that I've been meaning to sell. And you know what? Seeing people like happy to buy that electronic gizmo or gadget budget for pennies on the dollar from which you'd buy it brand new. Makes me happy too.
What'd you sell? What was the electronic device?
So we had an old iPad, like an iPad generation 2
okay.
that had just gotten really slow. But some people really want those
Is going to be able to put that thing
to use. We had a Chromebook that we were using for virtual school.
I don't care about a Chromebook.
Chromebooks are not great. They're kind of slow too. But it was one of those things where we had bought it during, you know, on sale or something to help facilitate virtual school during the pandemic. And now we're not using it anymore.
We got it from the school.
We stole it from...
Had to scratch out this code that was engraved on the top.
No, we actually got it ourselves.
Yeah, well, something worth mentioning too, Amanda mentioned going to consignment stores to sell some of her stuff as
well. That was a great tip.
And that was really cool to mention because personally, I don't know what consignment stores are. I know what they are. I just haven't participated in them myself.
Yeah.
I know that you can leave things there at the store. They take a cut when it comes time to sell because they've got the storefront, all that kind of thing. I don't know. In my mind, it's like this old school term. It's like if you go to consignment shops, I bet you also buy stuff on layaway. Like it's a part of this, the same sort of generational shift in my mind.
I think of consignment stores as people who are
more modern
antique enthusiasts or something, like vintage people.
That's true.
And sometimes those consignment stores are actually perfect for some of those items where you're like, I think this is worth something, but I don't know how to go about selling it. I don't know how to find the right buyer who's going to pay the amount that this thing is worth. And so Amanda mentioned consignment shops for some of those things. I think she's got a good point because... Let's say I've got a mid-century antique and I just post it on Facebook yard sale myself.
Like I did.
For Facebook Marketplace, I guess, right? The chances are I am not going to get top dollar. But let's say somebody else with a mid-century following on Instagram of 10,000 people, they might be able to take that same piece and sell it for twice as much as I could because the buyers that want that kind of stuff are specifically looking at this person's page consistently. They have good stuff. And so that's kind of how I think of consignment stores. I think it can help you find the right buyer if you have an item that's of particular specific niche value.
That's true. So I will sell you that bedroom set for a little under $2,000 and you can take it to the consignment shop and maybe earn
Maybe get $4,000 for it?
You want to do it?
No, I'll give you $800 for it, and then I will go take the consignment.
I'd probably sell it to you for $800.
Okay. All right, let me know.
Honestly, I think it might end up around like in the $800 to $1,100 range, personally.
Well,
we'll see.
That's one of the beautiful things, I think, about American capitalism is people can buy things.
Oh, you're getting ahead of yourself now, man, because we want to talk about capitalism.
No, I know. We will in this episode, but I have something else. Just that middlemen or women can profit because of the laziness of other folks. And you can have
Stop calling me lazy, dude.
I'm lazy, too.
Busyness. four kids.
I, too, can be lazy or busy and find... I'd rather have someone else maybe sell something on my behalf, and maybe we both end up profiting. Which is
sure,
cool.
Totally.
But all right, enough about that, Matt. Let's mention the beer we're having on this episode. This one is called Escape from Lager Mountain by Flying Machine Brewing. I think what are they out of North Carolina?
They got the North Carolina logo on there or the outline of the state. So that's how you know it's legit. Came from that actual state. Looking forward to enjoying this one today, buddy.
Yeah, no doubt. Me too. But let's move on. Let's ask the question, is the stock market broken? We've got a lot of ground to cover on this one, Matt. And really, when you look at it, the stock market is the greatest wealth creating machine in history, and investing in the market to achieve millionaire status. Like that's what people want, right? You want to become a millionaire. You want $1 million in those retirement accounts. Well, that's become possible for such a large amount of folks in this country in particular, thanks to workplace retirement accounts and low-cost index funds. Fidelity alone, one of our favorite brokerage houses, they reported that about 442,000 investors have more than $1 million in their 401ks as of last year. That's just Fidelity customers. So we potentially have millions of people who are millionaires in this country. And it's easier to do than ever before now. And it makes me think, Matt, of maybe like some of our earliest episodes of How to Money that we like to pretend never happened because they weren't that great. Like I kind of refuse to go back and listen because I don't know that I could bear the weight of our ineptitude in those early episodes.
Not ineptitude, just lack of total awesomeness. I'll say that.
We've gotten better. We've grown a lot in 500 episodes.
They were functional.
Yes.
It's like I pictured almost like a craftsman who's like a drywaller. Somebody who knows how to do drywall. Like, is that drywall up on the wall? Does it hold? Does it create a wall? Yes, to all of those things. But there's sort of an artistry to it. And that's what you develop over time.
You can tell bad drywall. You see the seams and
yeah,
stuff like that.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
You see the tape protruding.
Maybe I'm getting a little too poetic when it comes to podcasting. We just sit down and talk.
Yeah. So. But we have gotten better at sitting down and talking. And
I think so.
Just because the path hasn't always been smooth, I mean, some episodes have been better than others. And along the way, most of our episodes hopefully have generally gotten just a little bit easier for people to listen to. Well, that doesn't mean that the whole ride hasn't been worthwhile and that those first episodes weren't necessary in part of the growth process. And right now, it just kind of makes me think like, well, we're experiencing some market turbulence and future predictions of what the stock market is going to do in coming years aren't looking so hot either. And so, I don't know, should you not take a flight maybe because there's going to be turbulence? Should you not go see your grandma because on the way, there might be some bumpy ride in the air? No, of course, you're still going to take the airplane ride in order to cut 20 hours off your trip if you're flying across the country. And so today on the show, we're going to kind of talk about how we think you should be thinking about the current choppy market and then how that should also influence your behavior.
That's right. Yeah, you're saying that the general trajectory of the stock market has been up and to the right. That's what we're talking about today. But more recently, like what you're specifically talking about here is volatility, because the stock market has been in the dumps. You know, this has been a terrible start to investing so far in 2022. And like we often see during these bouts of volatility, a lot of investors, they start wondering if things are going to be different this time, right? It's been a good 100 years. It's been a good run, but it's all over now. And it's not just a chicken little mindset that's running amok in your friend group. There are a ton of different financial forecasts out there that are being made about the fact that we're in for a lower performance year and even less stellar returns for years to come. And it's not even just the talking heads like on CNBC spouting this nonsense.
We can dismiss them pretty easily if need be.
Exactly. The different investing TV shows out there. Respected companies like Fidelity, like you just mentioned, Joel, like Vanguard, other large banks, they're predicting average 10-year future returns in the 3-4% range. And those predictions could be significantly off in either direction. Of course, these are just educated guesses. But given the last decade of incredible returns, they might not be too far off. But even still, what do we do with this information today? You know, should predictions of these subpar future returns affect how we should invest today? That's what we're discussing today on the podcast.
Yeah. So you hinted at the fact that the last 10, 12 years, Matt, have been just incredible when it comes to stock market returns. And so let's talk about that bull run for a second, because a lot of How to Money listeners, they've really only experienced what it looks like to invest in the middle of a bull run, not counting maybe like the blip we saw in 2020 when we thought it was the end of the world. But that recovery, that stock market recovery in the teeth of the beginning of COVID was just incredibly rapid. So most of us barely experienced it.
Yeah, and that
we worried about other things too at that
exactly.
time.
Exactly. That was a not is the stock market broken, but is humanity broken?
Yes,
like
exactly.
At that point, there was bigger things. And once we got that under control, it's like, oh, okay, no, things are going
to
be fine.
But right now, all the focus is more on the market because there's less societally to focus on. And when you look at these returns historically, like with 20 and 28% returns over the past couple of years, and an almost 19% average annual return since the Great Recession, some folks in their 20s and early 30s, they might have been starting to think that the stock market literally only ever goes up, right?
Now you only get those peanut M&Ms anytime you want them.
Like, wait, on demand. Are recessions a thing of the past?
Right.
And no, the answer is that's not the case. And so, yeah, some folks started to think that cash was trash and that saving money was stupid. Investing, of course, is where it's at. And so, yeah, but you and I, we like investing. We're not hating on investing. We think it's necessary when it comes to building wealth, but not to the detriment of other prudent personal finance decisions. And so folks now are starting to realize maybe some of the importance of emergency funds or savings, liquid cash. Those are important things, even though it can feel like a dumb decision, especially in the short term when other people are finding ways to make money, what looks like hand over fist. And you're sitting there with that e-fund intact and you're like, why am I not investing this? Mm. Well, I think now we're experiencing the reason why people should not be investing that emergency fund. There's a cushion that's necessary for folks to have.
Yeah, I mean, this is why we came up with the seven money gears, because there's a formulaic process that we want folks to go through. And it's not just about getting that cushion, but there are other important things to do as well. We definitely want folks to take that balanced approach. But yeah, you know, those outsized gains that you're talking about, they were not going to last forever. And especially with the low interest rates that we saw with the Fed intervention, like that all helped to speed some of the growth that we've seen. And so it's important to zoom out and to take a broader look at what the stock market typically returns. Because if you only paid attention to the past 12 or 13 years, it can be easy to fool yourself into thinking that these outsized returns are the new normal. So lately, I've been running a good bit more. I'm trying to train for the Peachtree Road Race. That's Atlanta's premier 10K, available to anybody who signs up for the most part. But like, it makes me think of tracking.
You get to run with 100,000 of your closest friends.
It's so many people. But okay, imagine if you're training, or like during a race, you're watching your time, you're tracking your pace. You get to a portion of the race where there's maybe a long sort of easy downhill. You would see your pace just go off the charts. Like, you would see your average pace just decline significantly, and it's going to look like you're going to be able to maybe set a personal record, maybe even a PR for your age group. Who knows? But it would be foolish to just assume that you would be able to maintain that pace once you started to gain elevation again.
Yeah, once you get to Heart Attack Hill, right? Isn't that what they call it?
Cardiac. Cardiac Hill or whatever. Okay. It's like right there next to the hospital. But the same is true with the market as well. You know, we've had some incredible bursts. We've had some periods of some stretches where the returns were off the charts. And while we do believe that the market will continue to go up over time, you know, it always does, that doesn't mean that the pace of that growth will stay the same.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really good way of putting it, Matt, because in the middle of that race, yeah, you're feeling good about your pace, but then you hit the tougher sections and you are inevitably going to slow down. Humans just can't run uphill as fast as they can run down.
There's some folks who disagree with you, but
really?
Oh yeah. There's people who like to book it uphills. It's tough going fast downhills because I think I'm more prone to injury because you're going a little bit faster.
Depends how steep the hill is.
You're a little out of control.
You want that gentle decline.
Yeah, exactly.
That's going to be the best acceleration.
It's hard on the knees, too.
Right, no, that's true.
Terrible.
That reminds me, Matt, of a piece that Barry Ritholtz wrote recently. He's a financial writer, and he was discussing the fundamental reason that the market has been having a rough go of it lately, and he talked about Occam's razor, which basically means that the simplest explanation is almost always the correct one. And he was saying that means that, the simplest explanation is just what's called mean reversion. That's at the heart of recent declines. It's the fact that we have experienced these outside gains. And of course, now we're paying the price as the stock market is retreating. And it made me think of like a baseball player who starts off the season first month of the year.
More sports. We're hitting everybody with all the different illustrations we can think of.
So baseball player hitting 375, but typically they're hitting 250, right? That's their normal
average, right?
Yeah.
250.
Well, that's pretty average, I would say. I feel, I don't know, in modern baseball, though, more strikeouts, worse batting averages lately. It's,
oh, really?
It's a tougher sport to watch these days. Yeah. But
what if it's your first time at bat and you get a hit and you're batting 1,000?
That's
maybe.
Right. That's true. Yeah. What's the likelihood that's going to last the whole season?
Not likely.
Unless you get like some sort of season ending injury right after that hit, I guess. But yeah, it's a nice start to the season to be hitting close to 400. But in reality, you're going to experience mean reversion, especially in those dog days of summer. Even if you have a killer month in May, let's say, July and August are going to come around and your batting average is going to start to dip.
Start feeling that summer heat
a little bit.
Start sweating a little bit more than you were down there in spring training.
Well, then
you're out there in Colorado where it's nice and cool.
80, 90, 100 games into the season and you're probably starting to have some fatigue. There's just no way to continue it for a whole season. And so, yeah, things are coming back down to earth. And the same thing is happening with the market, right? Those exorbitant returns that we've seen over the past decade, they're not the new forever reality, although I think some people were starting to think that it was. They were at least treating their money as though the stock market was this M&M candy machine that was going to continue to produce until we reached the moon status, I guess, or whatever that was going to be. I don't know.
Yeah, and hopefully we're not bumming you out with this more somber conversation. But even though we are injecting you with a dose of realism, we still have plenty of reasons to believe that you should be investing in the stock market. And we're actually going to talk some specifically about what you should be doing with this new information. The fact that not only have we entered some periods of volatility, but that there is some talk about the fact that the market may not be what it used to. We'll get to all of that right after this break.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Joel, so we were just recounting our trip to Scotland. This is the trip that we took this time last year, actually, with some of our friends over the weekend. And one of the highlights from Edinburgh was stumbling upon the absolute best meat pie shop. Mm-hmm. They were fresh out of the oven. They had that perfectly flaky crust. But guess what? That serendipitous experience would never have happened if we'd stayed at a boring hotel. We had found the perfect flat in the coolest part of town, thanks to Airbnb.
Ah, man, I'm still dreaming about those meat pies. You're making me drool. And while turning to Airbnb might be a no-brainer when you're looking to spend some money on travel, it might not be the first thing you think of when you're looking to make some money. Why let it sit empty, your house, when it could be earning extra income, though? It's the financially smart thing to do. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra dough.
Yeah, that's right. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Spring cleaning is kind of an annual rite of passage. We've all got to do it, minimize the junk that we have in our house. Emily and I, we just cleaned our closets out. It took hours. But it was so worth it. Now we've only got stuff in there that we love, and it's easier to find everything too. And so, you know, while cleaning your closets is helpful, well, there's something else you can do for your family this spring. Shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius, for example, is a really important part of your financial planning for the year.
That's right. Yeah. And here is the thing that's important to remember, because you might be thinking you don't need to check out Policy Genius because you've got a policy through work. But even if you have a life insurance policy through your job, it may not offer you enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000 plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the a.m. in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com/howtomoney. All right, Matt, we're back. We're still talking about the stock market. Is it broken, or is this just the reality of how the stock market works? We'll talk about maybe the fundamentals of how the stock market works here in a little bit. And we'll also talk about whether or not folks should be making changes to their portfolio kind of based on what's happening right now and based on some of the predictions. Like you talked about those Fidelity and Vanguard predictions where it's like, growth's going to slow a good bit. And your portfolio isn't going to, you're not going to see the gains that you've been seeing. So then how do you approach that likely near-term future? We'll discuss that in just a second. But I wanted to talk about optimism for a second because, you know, I think stock market optimism is a good thing for all of us to have. And I myself am pretty optimistic and just as an individual, but you know, I think it's also possible to take optimism to the extreme, right? Mm-hmm. You can be so optimistic that you're not actually looking at facts on the ground. You're not living in reality. And so there's a difference between a healthy dose of optimism and being optimistic to a point where you're living in some sort of Mary Poppins fantasy.
Mary Poppins Returns or the original?
The original, probably.
The new one's really good.
It is good. It is good.
The girls can't get enough of that. Evie has been humming, what is the something? Music Hall.
Oh, you know, what is that song? Yeah, okay. I've only seen it once, so it's been a while.
She will not stop humming that thing. Sorry, I totally got distracted when you said Mary Poppins.
No, it's all good. But it's adorable when they start dancing with penguins and stuff like that. But, but really, they're not in the real world at that point.
They're not grounded in reality. That's what we're talking about.
And this is what I think has happened to a lot of investors in the past couple of years, maybe even some How to Money listeners. It's taking what is otherwise one of the greatest ways to build wealth, and folks have attempted to make money in ways that don't make much sense, right? That's given rise to NFTs, random crypto coins, and it is reflective of this frothy environment where sanity largely left the building. There's a difference, I'd say, between that reality-based optimism that reflects what we're saying are historical realities, and then this overly rosy outlook that has, I would say, has an element of greed at the heart of it, where people, they're not content with average. And what folks want is to make money at a pace that is otherworldly, but like our old pal Warren Buffett says, it's time to get fearful when others are greedy, and we have seen greedy behavior recently, and I think we're kind of on the other side of the hill from some of that greedy behavior. We're seeing maybe some of the demise of some of those more greedy behaviors.
Yeah. You know, I think it's worth pointing out, too, I think one of the reasons we saw some of that greedy behavior is because, like, think about the amount of money that was injected into our, you know, speaking of, I keep saying injections. We're talking about injecting realism, talking about injecting stimulus funds. But, like, we, without having to lift a finger, got so much money that we weren't necessarily counting on.
Yeah, a huge percentage of Americans did.
Yes, it showed up in our bank accounts.
And they couldn't spend it because they were home.
Exactly. And so what do you do with that? I think you tend to make more speculative moves. Like, you tend to gamble that money with a chance that it might go up, especially as you've heard people talk about crypto for a while. Oh, what are these new NFTs? And you start taking that money, you start putting it in there.
And you see people getting rich quickly, and you're like, I better jump in on that.
Exactly. But like that certainly has been something that has changed. And when others out there were a little more greedy, hopefully we should have been a little more fearful. But like you said, we're kind of seeing the tide shift. We're starting to see it go out. That optimism has quickly shifted to pessimism. It seems like, speaking of CNBC, they released a survey last month, and it showed that only 28% of investors think that it's currently a good time to be in stocks right now. People are just less enthusiastic about stocks because they aren't doing so hot right now. And the thing is, though, the market, it doesn't care about how you're feeling. For instance, the ridiculously short COVID blip, like you mentioned, Joel, like that's what that taught us, I think, because our collective society was at that point in time reeling from pandemic fallout.
So much uncertainty. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a lot that we didn't know. But simultaneously, the market was climbing rapidly. And so the current pessimistic mood, it often means that long-term investors like ourselves, I think, should become even more optimistic, taking advantage of stock declines so that our investment dollars go even further.
Yeah, because the flip side of that Warren Buffett quote I gave Matt, he says to get fearful when others are greedy. Well, we'll be greedy when others are fearful. And so now that the tide is shifting, stocks are down, who is out there buying more stocks? It's Warren Buffett is. And I think it's a sign that we should be too. When more people are pessimistic rather than optimistic, and consumer sentiment has essentially shifted in terms of how they view the stock market, it's time for us to maybe take the opposite approach, putting more of our money to work. And you know, it's also important to point out that the economy is not the stock market. There's a lot of talk about the risk of the Fed, you know, tipping the economy into a recession due to the need to raise interest rates because of inflation. Inflation is obviously running hot, and the Fed is trying to get that under control. We talked about this actually in episode 503 when we were talking about preparing for a looming recession.
A looming recession.
That's right. That's right.
If you recall.
And a recession is defined as two consecutive quarters of GDP decline. But the fact is that the stock market, it doesn't necessarily decline during a recession. If you look at the past 70 years, the average return during a recession was -1%. And you might say, aha, so the market does go down.
Gotcha.
Boys, you're wrong. But it's interesting. In reality, the returns are even worse in the lead up to a recession. So on average, the stock market returned -2% 6 months prior to a recession and -3% a year, 12 months prior to a recession. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, if you want to guess stock market returns after the recession begins, 7 to 16% between 6 and 12 months are the returns. So in the extreme positive range after the start of a recession, it's amazing how the market is almost like forecasting the where the economy is going to eventually end up. They're not always going in lockstep together.
which only reinforces the fact that it's difficult, incredibly difficult, to time the market and to figure out when is the actual bottom as the market is looking ahead. But this only reinforces that Warren Buffett quote, right? Often when things look bad, that is the best time to invest, which obviously, again, it seems counterintuitive. And we mentioned the historical reality of the stock market just a second ago. So let's talk about that for a second. The earnings of publicly traded companies as a whole continue to go up over time. Not every company progresses at the same pace. And some companies are actually declining while others are booming. But overall, if you own a diversified basket of companies, say, for instance, in a total stock market index fund or the S&P 500, you're going to see your money grow over time because the average return of the market since 1928 has been 9.8% a year. And so this beautifully creative and simultaneously destructive machine of capitalism, it just continues its march, again, upwards and onwards, even when world events are scary and when consumer confidence is low, which it is right now.
Yeah, Matt, what you're talking about here, these returns, these historic returns, are based on the underlying reality that of capitalism. And it's as these companies, these individual companies, are participating in this overall system that we have, they are benefiting all of us as they create new items, as new technology comes out. It drives prices down and it drives innovation up. And in episode 479, we discussed why we feel like capitalism is ultimately a force for good. And if you'd ask us a question, is it only a good thing? We would say no. Free markets, they don't fix everything. There are other problems in our society that need to be remedied other ways. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it's the best economic system that we've got. And it's increased living standards and it's brought more folks out of poverty than anything else humans have tried. And so, yeah, businesses that we invest in, they're working to create value in our society. And if they find a customer base and they succeed, profit is the end result. And as investors in the stock market, we get to participate in some of those profits, which I think is the coolest thing ever. It kind of almost doesn't seem fair, Matt, that we can kick back and passively invest.
It almost doesn't.
Use almost none of our brain energy, just use our dollars, and still see something like a 10% return over the past 100 years. But really, for the average index investor, for the lazy, boring investor route like we want people to take, it's quite simple, and history points to the fact that it's quite effective in helping us build wealth.
Yeah, what's really interesting, too, is to consider how the market, how it self-regulates, right? Because if you take that, imagine a situation, like a worst-case scenario, where you've got everybody has become a passive investor and nobody is innovating. Well, what's going to happen to the stock market returns? You could foresee a world where you could see those returns decline, right? Because if fewer people are out there taking risks because everybody wants to play it safe and invest in the entire stock market, there is technically less value being brought into the world, which means lower returns. But it's self-regulating in this way because there are going to be individuals who say, well, I want to see a higher return.
Yeah.
And so they are then willing to risk their dollars in ways that ultimately need to provide more value and more benefit to the world in order for them to receive the benefit from that direct investment. And of course, people who invest within that company, you know, within those individuals as well, will see these higher returns. I mention this because you could foresee a world where it's just like, well, if everybody becomes passive total stock market investors, well, maybe we are going to see declines in the market. But ultimately, I almost see it as like this automatic leveling system that's just inherently built into the market.
There will always be people who think that they're smarter and who want bigger, better returns.
Or just want to do something different. You know, like there will be individuals who want that autonomy and don't want to sit back because they've got something to create. They have something that they want to introduce into the world. They want to make their mark.
Yeah. And so I think there will always be opportunity for us kickback style passive investors because of those other folks on the other side of the spectrum.
Exactly. It's super cool when you think about it that way. But there will be carnage along the way of the stock market growth. You don't get the reward without the risk. You're not going to see that average 10% return without some subpar years. It comes with the territory. But overall, the economy will continue to grow and corporations that you can invest in will continue to earn more money. And again, some companies, they're going to stick around for decades, creating loads of profit for investors, but others won't stick around for long or do anything terribly noteworthy. And that is one of the coolest aspects of capitalism, is that it automatically self-cleanses. The market decides what companies are going to stick around and which ones get the boot. But again, the general trajectory is up and to the right. It's healthy to remind ourselves that the entire value of the U.S. stock market, the entire market was $1.2 trillion back in 1982.
Wow.
Apple alone is worth significantly more than that right now. I think it's double that. And so we've got enough historical data in our corner to point to the reality that despite these immediate market setbacks that we're experiencing, progress will continue and we can all benefit from that progress. This is why we're optimistic. It's not because we have some sort of pie in the sky reason to think that, oh, things will always get better. We can look back at history. History informs the future. It's not guaranteed, but we can be encouraged by that fact.
Yeah, it's not some sort of Pollyanna hoping and wishing, or it's not like an ostrich putting our head in the sand, just kind of against all odds, wanting something to be the case. It is truly the historical reality. We have precedent, really, that we can look to telling us what the stock market is likely to do in the years ahead. And despite massive shifts to the way our country functions, we'll continue to be the greatest wealth building machine moving forward. But if you want it to be that in your life, if you want to be able to use the stock market to your advantage, well, there are some things you're going to need to realize. And one of those things might be making some changes to the way that you're investing. And so we'll talk about whether the current market reality and, you know, future lower return predictions should actually cause you to do anything different with your portfolio in the here and now. We'll get to some of our thoughts on that right after this. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Joel, so we were just recounting our trip to Scotland. This is the trip that we took this time last year, actually, with some of our friends over the weekend. And one of the highlights from Edinburgh was stumbling upon the absolute best meat pie shop. Mm-hmm. They were fresh out of the oven. They had that perfectly flaky crust. But guess what? That serendipitous experience would never have happened if we'd stayed at a boring hotel. We had found the perfect flat in the coolest part of town, thanks to Airbnb.
Ah, man, I'm still dreaming about those meat pies. You're making me drool. And while turning to Airbnb might be a no-brainer when you're looking to spend some money on travel, it might not be the first thing you think of when you're looking to make some money. Why let it sit empty, your house, when it could be earning extra income, though? It's the financially smart thing to do. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra dough.
Yeah, that's right. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000 plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the a.m. in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's Cachava.com/howtomoney.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
All right, we're back from the break talking about investing in the market, and I still have that song stuck in my head. Are y'all not a fan of that Mary Poppins?
I mean, we watched it once.
Returns?
Yeah, I guess we just haven't, I don't know, watched it again.
Lin-Manuel.
Maybe we should.
Only cranks out the hits.
He does.
If you can invest in a person, invest in him.
I think you're right.
Him and Tom Brady. Maybe they're both at the top of their game, and you can only go down from here.
I think so. I mean, Lin-Manuel is one of those prolific individuals who everything he creates seems to turn to gold.
He's got that Midas touch.
There's Hamilton, obviously, Encanto, another one. I mean, just really, if you get him involved in a project, it's going to be great.
Okay. I feel like we're going off track again, but we're talking about investing, and we have talked through some of these trends that we're seeing here in the near term. We're talking about the overall larger trend of the stock market and what you should expect. But there are a few things that you can do differently with the information that we've talked about so far and with the predictions that we truly may not see the kind of returns that we've seen over the past 12, 13 years. There are a few things that you can do differently with this information, the fact that returns may not be what they once were. And so for starters, one of these things that you can do is start socking away more money. If returns are likely to be lower, you might need to invest more of your paycheck in order to reach some of your financial goals. If that's something that is financially possible for you, ramping up the percentage that you are socking away is a solid move. We're not necessarily talking about taking extreme measures, extreme steps here, but just to keep doing what you've been doing, but maybe just ratcheting it up a little bit. Yeah. You might want to increase that amount that you are investing.
Put your foot on the pedal just a little bit harder and add a couple extra percentage points maybe to what you're putting into your 401k. Investing more in light of potentially inferior returns moving forward is one great way to kind of counterbalance things and to make sure that you're going to hit those financial goals that you've got for yourself.
Yeah, and hear what we're saying here. This is just a slight change to the behavior that you're already doing. You're already going in the right direction. Just maybe just juice it just a little bit more. We're not telling you to pull the e-brake. You know, we're not telling you just to throw it in reverse and totally wreck your vehicle. We're not telling you to start swerving, or we're not telling you to, at the last second, exit off the highway, cutting a bunch of people off and potentially wrecking yourself. That is not what we want you to do.
That's
with
right.
your portfolio.
And we don't even need you to like pedal to the metal, right? Like you
right.
can, you
yep.
don't have to go from saving 8% of your paycheck to saving 32%, right? That's just not necessary. But in light of those future inferior returns, then socking more money away does make more sense. Another course of action that you could take is to take more risks with your investments, right? This is something that needs to be discussed, Matt, but really, it's best done on a case-by-case scenario. It's hard for us to tell everyone that they should be adding more risk to their portfolio because we've got listeners of all ages and stages, people who are in the wealth building phase of their life, people who are in the wealth preservation stage of their life, and there's a different tact that needs to be taken for each of those individuals depending on where they are. And I think for some people, accepting more risks, it makes sense if they are still in the wealth building phase of life. And mm-hmm. you know, the short-term bouts of turbulence aren't going to significantly impact them. And so it's actually going to help boost their returns if they're dollar cost averaging by investing in a slightly more risky way. And what I mean by that is mostly that if you have an insufficient allocation of your investment portfolio towards stocks. So ramping that up and having more exposure to the stock market
sure.
in the future could and should over the years actually help boost your returns. But then for others, taking on more risk could impact their ability to retire, Matt. It can have a significantly negative impact if you have too much stock market exposure and you need those funds in the near term. If you have to start drawing on those funds because you're quitting work. So for instance, like my parents, they're supposed to be quitting work altogether within the next 9 months. And there's no way I would tell them that they should have more stock market exposure mm-hmm. at this point in their life. And so, yeah, you have to kind of take your own specific situation into account. More risk is helpful for some, but harmful for others.
Yeah, that is a healthy way to expose yourself to more risk. Because if you're in your 20s, you don't need to be in a 60-40 portfolio where you've got 40% bonds. You should probably be 100% in stocks. I'm nearly 40 and I am 100% in stocks. But that can be a healthy approach to adding more risk to your portfolio. But you can also, you could veer off the highway and take this, you know, into the danger zone. Some folks in search of high returns have opted for even riskier asset classes like crypto, which is still a highly unproven and very speculative place to put your money. Some folks have seen their wealth cut in half or even more with no real historical assurance that there is going to be a significant bounce back by any means. And you got to ask yourself, can you stomach that sort of drawdown? because knowing your specific timeline, knowing your tolerance for risk, is this is all going to be crucial information before you start ramping up your risk level. And for a lot of folks, the best course of action is to keep doing whatever it is that you're doing right now, even in the midst of subpar market predictions. We would not recommend for you to gamble in order to increase your return. Just stay the course.
Yeah, Matt, there is a certain window in which taking on more risk might make sense for people. But then there is the ability, you can turn the risk dial up to like 9,000. And that is what putting, let's say, everything in toward, into different crypto coins would be. And some folks have taken that approach and it has hit them right where it hurts lately because, yeah, the crypto market has been not so great. And no matter what, Matt, there are a few things that people should always pay attention to, whether we're experiencing a bull or a bear market. And if you pay attention to these few things in particular, I think people are likely to have a good wealth building experience over the years. And it doesn't mean they won't be immune from downturns or portfolio losses, but it will mean they'll be able to stay the course and they'll be able to experience the wealth generating abilities of the overall stock market over the years, over the decades. And so let's talk about a few of those things. One is choosing the right funds to invest in, and specifically opting for diversification, because I will say, having a diversified portfolio has felt pretty boring over the past few years in particular. There have been a lot of people chatting about Cathie Wood and her ARK fund, ARKK, which is the innovation fund.
Killed it during the pandemic?
Yeah. I mean, like, to see some of the returns she was experiencing, the exploding growth of some of the companies that she was betting on, it drew a lot of eyeballs, it drew a lot of media attention, and it drew a lot of investor dollars. People were excited. They wanted to participate. They wanted to be a part of the next big investment fund. And so, yeah, it's drawn actually some similar interest as the fund has been plummeting recently too. And it can just be tough though for people to watch while other people out there in the investing space are making a killing when you're just humming along getting basic average S&P 500 level returns. And so, yeah, diversification though, it can be boring on the way up, but it's a lifesaver on the way down. Because when you look at what's happened with that ARK Innovation Fund just in the last 6 months, and when you look at what's happening in the overall stock market, you know what? It's a whole lot easier to stomach what's been happening in the overall stock market than it is in just a handful of those high-flying stocks. Anybody who decided to invest most of their retirement in that ARK fund is understandably freaking out right now because of the roller coaster ride they've been on. And right now, they are not sitting in a good place. And I'd be frightened if I had my money there. And so I think that diversification point is crucial. Finding a fund that's highly diversified, that gives you a wide exposure to the overall stock market is important so that you're not putting all your eggs in one basket or just a few baskets.
That's right. Yeah. So regardless of what the market's doing, pay attention to the choice of funds that you're putting your money in. And a part of that fund choice is paying attention to the all-important expense ratio as well. We don't want you to pay more when you don't need to, because these fees will eat into your returns, especially the longer you plan to continue investing those dollars. You want to make sure that you aren't kneecapping yourself and experiencing poor returns due to a poor choice of funds. And so if you've been listening for any amount of time, you know that we love Vanguard, we love Fidelity and Schwab. Those are the discount brokerages who offer the diversified total market style funds that we love with microscopic to virtually non-existent fees. When we're talking hundredths of a percentage point when it comes to what they're charging you, that's what we want to see. Either that or nothing at all.
Yeah, man, I see those higher fees as like insult to injury, especially when that fee-laden fund is underperforming those broader market super cheap index funds that you and I love.
It's quite literally kicking you while you're down.
Yes, it is. And so let's say you are invested in a way that aligns with your own specific risk tolerance. Well, an important step to take when it comes to staying the course is to insulate yourself from the feeling of pain when the market is not doing so hot. Not by avoiding market participation, not by not investing, but by not looking at what's going on with your portfolio.
Right, right.
That is a mistake I think people make, is that they pay too much attention. Because once you kind of have your strategy down, once you know your risk tolerance, and once you have started stocking money in every 2 weeks, like clockwork on the reg, Well, who cares what's happening? You're going to want to continue to ride it out through thick and through thin. And so what you might need to do is to, one, yeah, not look at your portfolio performance, especially in times of turbulence, and also avoid the headlines. So don't log into your account and kind of see that you're down 6% on the week or 15% on the year, right? Those inputs and seeing them firsthand can trigger an emotional reaction, leading to potentially a knee-jerk reaction on your part, selling maybe at the wrong time, locking in losses. And yeah, this costs you money and it negatively impacts your financial future, especially if you're moving money that is in the market while it's down into cash. You're doing the exact opposite thing. We want to see you actually funneling more of your cash from the sidelines into the market to take advantage of basically the sale that's happening in the market at the current moment. And so, but it's really important to kind of have a couple of mechanisms in place that prevent you from doing something that's emotionally charged that could ultimately affect your future wealth by thousands or tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, it's important to remember that these temporary market downturns, they're not costing you anything unless you sell. Once you sell, you cement those losses. And so in the game of investing, it's important to think and act for the long term. And you do that by reminding yourself why it is that you're investing in the first place. And for most of us, it isn't to get filthy rich. That's not our goal. It sounds nice, but it's not our goal, right? Not many of us need or want tens of millions of dollars in assets. Instead, we would rather get to a point of financial security and then hopefully to be able to achieve financial independence in a reasonable amount of time. And so when you remember why it is that you're investing, chasing these returns, it seems less important all of a sudden. It's why it's so important to keep your timeline in mind, right? Going back to like the running analogy, if you know, it's difficult to know how fast you should be running if you don't know if you're running for 100 meters or if you're running a 10K, right? And so that's going to have a massive impact on the pace at which you're expecting to run. And so the same thing is true when it comes to the rate at which you expect to see returns within your portfolio.
Yeah, I like that, Matt. If you remember that you're investing for future retirement, that you're still 30 years away from the desire or the feeling you have, like, I need to double my money by investing in some sort of speculative asset within the next 3 to 6 months. Well, that kind of goes away because you're like, that's not the game I'm playing. Like, why am I even trying for that? Really, all I want is financial independence 20 years down the road. And so you can kind of like chillax and let other people, you know, do their crazy gambling thing, all that, take part in all that speculation. You don't have to do it because you're not playing that game. And then ultimately, what we would say when it comes to the stock market is there's no better alternative when you're looking to grow wealth over the long haul. Again, if you're in the wealth building phase of your life, the stock market is where you're going to want to be stashing dough despite the volatility and the lackluster future predictions. You know, if you hadn't noticed, even with recent upticks in what savings accounts are paying, rates on money you're stashing away with your bank, they still suck. And that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be saving. You should. Like, we're still fans of people having liquid cash, like we talked about earlier in the episode. It just means that you need market exposure to grow your nest egg, because if you're just saving, you're not going to see your returns compound in any meaningful way. And so, yeah, while the next few months and potentially even the next few years might see small or insignificant returns, it's still smart to bet on American ingenuity and to invest your money in our collective future, I would say, in order to grow your wealth for your future. Really, when you're looking at alternatives, there aren't many that rival the wealth building potential of the U.S. stock market.
That's right, man. That's where we're putting our money, in the stock market, as well as into the coffers of wonderful craft breweries, including those of Flying Machine. This is Escape from Lager Mountain. This is a dry hopped rice lager with a couple of hops here that they're calling out. And I noticed here, too, that this is a beer out of Wilmington. There are a lot of great breweries in Wilmington, not just in North Carolina in general, but I mean, specifically Wilmington. They must have like really good beer laws up there in North Carolina to incentivize all of this great brewing. But what were your thoughts on this specific beer?
Okay. I will say I haven't had many rice lagers.
I haven't either.
And I thought it was really tasty. Maybe I should have more rice lagers because this one was...
Especially this time of year.
Right. Mm. It was nice and light, but it also had those refreshing hop vibes. Like, you could tell the dry hops gave like nice hop aroma and good hop flavor without being overpowering. And so this was a great beer. I was a big fan.
Yeah. So from what I understand, when it comes to beers that are brewed with rice, it works as like a clarifying agent. And so it literally makes it taste clean cleaner, like cleaner and fresher, which is great when you're enjoying a nice cold lager like this. But it also literally makes it clearer when you're looking at it. And so it tends to pour a bit clearer as a, you know, compared to like a hazy pale ale or something like that. But the Flying Machine and the fact that they have the skull in here, this reminds me a lot of, is it Parrish that has the like the ghost in the machine?
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a lot of crossover.
That's a good New Orleans brewery right there.
It's also a great brewery. But we definitely enjoyed this one, again, from Flying Machine out of Wilmington, North Carolina. So if you're able to pick one of these up, wherever it is that you live, we highly recommend it, especially as an alternative to those macro lagers out there that you can buy.
Yeah, this is one of those well-crafted lagers. They're,
oh, yeah.
The macro ones. Like, it's amazing how big of a difference there are between a lot of the new craft lagers that are being made. This one has a ton of different flavor profile action going on. It's delicious, and it's clean, like you said, and versus like the muddled, just kind of like not so great flavors.
Stinky lagers.
Yeah. Yeah, the stinky ones that like you smell like your uncle, you know. So,
you know which uncle we're talking about.
Exactly,
too.
Exactly. Everyone's got one.
And plus, the label on this beer is really beautiful as well. You can find a picture of it up on our website at howtomoney.com, along with any resources that we may have mentioned during this episode.
That's right. And so, if you haven't signed up for the How to Money newsletter, by the way, you totally should go to howtomoney.com/newsletter. We are sending it out for free once a week into your inbox every single Tuesday morning. You'll get some of the best financial nuggets that we have to offer in your inbox. But Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.